What's up, my freaks, sharpness geeks, and purveyors of static goodness? Welcome to the Knife Freak Show. My name is Jonathan McNeese, and joined here by my co-host, Mr. Chase Boatwright.
Howdy, guys.
We're glad to have you guys back with us. We're going to try round two of this whole podcasting thing. Feel like we got some pretty good feedback on the first go-around, so kind of hated listening to myself talk and all the little glitches that I had, but what'd you think about it, Chase?
Sort of the same thing. I hated listening to myself talk and doing the editing and hearing myself 100 times, but you know, it was good. I had some good positive feedback from a few people, so
I feel like we had pretty good feedback, and I was expecting like 3 views or something. So like I don't know how many we're at now, but it was last time I looked, it was definitely more than I expected. So
yeah, it was more than 3.
We'll take it. Yeah. Got to put our time in here and earn our stripes on the podcasting scene here. So
yeah, I mean, that's what we're here to do.
Build it that's up, right.
Brick by brick. So
there you go. Yeah. So we thought we're going to try to kind of start implementing some somewhat regular segments. They may change up from time to time, just depending on what subjects we have to talk about from that particular week. But one of the things that we wanted to do was to do kind of like a current events in the knife industry kind of deal. What's in the news, or what's in the, sometimes literally the news, and sometimes just, you know, what's going on social media, that kind of stuff. So this week we actually happened to have something that was literally in the news. So we're going to let Chase read those headlines to you, and let's talk about them for just a little bit.
So from Syracuse.com, Crucible warns it could close in months, eliminating 158 jobs. And that's Crucible Industries, the supplier of all the CPM steels and, you know, even a few others that, you know, are very prolific in the knife industry as, you know, we know it. So
Magna Cut, no. Yeah. Magna Cut. That's where everybody's really freaking out, the Magna Cut.
Yeah. Yeah.
So did you see the response by Niagara to this?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Which is interesting to me because, I mean, I like a lot of Carpenter steels and, you know, as far as I know, La Trobe does good stuff. And, I mean, could be interesting to get other steel offerings beyond just Crucible. But, again, I mean, I don't want Crucible to leave or, you know, anything like that.
Well, did I understand it wrong? What we're talking about here, we probably should have read that headline too, that there was a post or a tweet or whatever put out by Niagara Specialty Metals, which supplies most, if not all, of the Magna Cut. Yeah, it may have been a post on there. I saw it somewhere, somebody reposted it. Yep. And they were talking about that they were working with other mills, essentially. But my understanding was they were going to have other mills actually making the CPM products, at least Magna Cut. Because they were talking something about the recipe, like using the same recipe, the same.
Well, that means they may be able to use the same recipe, but I don't think they could use the same name. Unless.
Maybe not.
Laren owns that trademark. And not.
Yeah, that's what I'm wondering. Who owns the actual. Yeah, but I'm not sure who owns.
I mean, Carpenter has 204P, which is essentially 20CV, which is essentially M390.
And, right.
You know, like. RWL-34, I know that's not the same thing, but like RWL-34 by Damasteel is 154CM or CPM-154. You know,
right.
There's other steels that are the same formula. But yeah, I don't know if they're going to be using the same formulas or not.
Yeah, I'm not sure. That was the way I interpreted the post, but I may have completely interpreted it wrong.
Okay.
It kind of seemed to me like maybe they had the rights to it, or maybe Laren has the rights to it, and they were going to. But now I'm totally just, you know, kind of guessing here.
Yeah.
So
no, I missed that part. We've placed orders with Aristeel, Carpenter Technologies, Elwood Quality Steels, and Universal Stainless, who will provide the same high quality products with the exact same chemistries. So yeah, I've missed that part.
Well, but that does kind of leave it open to what you said, though, that they may be the exact same steels with the exact same chemistries, but not the same name.
Yeah, yeah.
So
that's, you know, been happening before in the knife industry.
Yeah.
But
yeah. So. Which, I mean, if it gets to the point, if they do close, which they also said that they're trying to stay open. Apparently have filed Chapter 11 before some years back. So this is not the first time. something like that. Yeah, it's been several years ago from what I remember. So it's seems to be an ongoing problem as far as their financial woes. So, which kind of surprises me with, I mean, I don't know. I mean, in a plant that's 158 people, that's a pretty big plant, but like, I almost kind of would have thought the demand for MagnaCut alone in the knife industry would be enough to, like, I almost feel like we're using enough MagnaCut to keep 158 people working, you know? Like,
well, I mean, from what I understand, like, Crucible, like, deals a lot with, like, the automotive industry and the aerospace industry as well. I don't even know if, like, the knife industry is, like, a drop in the bucket for their actual...
Yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking, but then that was kind of when I was surprised when the plant was only 158 people. Because, like I said, I don't know how many people it takes to produce, you know, a roll of steel or whatever. So, I mean, that may be something that five people can do. I'm totally ignorant on what it takes, but
I have no idea.
It seemed to me a kind of a low number to be, like I said, that was my first thought too. Well, we're a small part of their business, but if you're only employing 158 people, like I said, I mean, I feel like the knife industry alone, just in MagnaCut, would probably be using enough product to, you know, keep 158 people busy, but maybe not. Again, I know nothing about running a mill, so.
No clue. But, yeah, so, I mean, I was reading back in the history of Crucible, and, like, apparently during the 80s, they had, like, 1,400, I think, employees or something like that.
Oh, wow.
And then they downsized to, like, 600, and then, you know, whenever they got bought out, they downsized again. I may not be getting the timelines right. I read this like a week ago, but you know, yeah. So, I mean, apparently it's become a lot more automated, as has everything else.
Sure.
And, you know, a lot of, you know, sort of jobs have been eliminated, but.
Right. And that may explain what I was talking about, like I said, with automation, it may take, you know, five people may be able to produce enough MagnaCut for the entire knife industry. You know,
yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
So that's. It's very interesting. It's going to be interesting to see how it plays out, because it sounds like at the very least we'll have an alternative to switch to, even if it's not technically named MagnaCut. And I mean, if it gets to the point that MagnaCut's not available, I don't really foresee it being a, you know, I think people will make the switch and that'll just be.
Yeah.
We'll look back on it down the road and be like, you remember when this was called MagnaCut? Like,
yeah.
I don't think it's going to be maybe a temporary thing, you know, maybe a temporary hitch in the process here and get a little, may have to use some other steels, maybe some of the carpenter steels, like you said, for a little bit. But in the meantime, I don't think it's going to be like just a major long-term problem. And they may even end up staying open.
Yeah. I'm hoping that's what ends up happening, and is they end up finding a buyer or something like that, where the mill can stay open and continue to produce the alloys that they produce. Cause I mean, not just MagnaCut, but I mean, they've got all their stainless models from 110 and S110 and S90 and S125.
Yep.
And then they've got all their tool steels that, you know, crew wear and 3V and 4V and all those things that are like, you know, looking at a lot of, I mean, I haven't looked at like the totality of everybody's, you know, steel catalog, but a lot of the carpenter steels that I'm familiar with, there's not a lot of those like high impact, high edge retention tool steels that I saw, but I mean, I don't know. I could be wrong there.
Yeah. May not be as many of those kind of designer steels that are so popular right now. So,
yeah, I mean, and they may be just under different, you know, different names. I know 3V's got a long history and stuff like that, and it's sort of changed hands and all that, but you know, I don't know. So
it's going to be interesting. And if it does actually affect the supply of some of the, you know, super steels, then we could even end up seeing kind of a little bit of a shift in the market as far as people having to learn to love some other stuff. You know, they may have to. And honestly, I mean, MagnaCut is great. I love MagnaCut, but there are a lot of other really good steels out there. And like, I think a lot of people are probably missing out on some other good steels with some really good qualities just because, you know, they've heard the hype about MagnaCut. Not that it's not justified, but just there's still a lot of other really good steels out there, and there's no one steel that's perfect for every situation. So,
no,
you know,
the one thing I got excited about seeing Carpenter's name, and I don't even know if this is true, but I just want XHP to come back, because I love XHP.
Yeah.
And I know you're with me on that. Like,
yep. I like XHP myself.
I think Did we do the original Mac 2s in XHP, or did we try to?
We did some. I think it was the original ones. I think we did XHP, and then we switched to 20V. Either that, or we did 20V, 20CV, and then shifted and did a run in XHP. I can't remember which way.
I think it was that went first way around, because I think you wanted to do XHP, and I was all about it. I love XHP.
Yeah.
And I think the first 200 or so were XHP, and then after
that. That sounds right. I think we actually had one in here not long ago for some spa work or some kind of repair work that was XHP. So I know for a fact we did some in XHP, but I'm a fan of it. It's a good steel. There's lots of other good steels out there too. It's just depends on where you put your, the most importance on for what you're using the knife for, Some people, the edge retention, some people it's corrosion resistance. It's just a matter of, kind of what's more important to you. Yeah. MagnaCut has managed to be the best of all worlds as much as anything has in recent history. So, we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
I feel like, like I said, it may take some people getting used to, maybe having to open their eyes to some different steels, whatever, but it was inevitable that was going to happen anyway. I mean, every single newest, greatest steel that's come out, something else has always come along and gotten popular, and kind of replaced it. So I don't think that it's MagnaCut's time yet, unless it's forced out of existence. Then other than that, I don't think that it's run its course, but it's inevitable that something else is going to come along anyway. So everything, the business, the industry will still march forward.
Definitely.
So, but it is sad. It's like I've been using Crucible steels. That's the main steels I've used, other than like the simple one. I was using a lot of 1095 and stuff, but on all the stainless steels that I've used, that's the vast majority of what I use have been Crucible steels. So
yeah,
it's kind of weird to think about.
They're a titan of the cutlery industry. I mean, literally they are the gold standard as far as companies go for knife steel. I mean, but, on the sort of, on our end of it, like you were talking about, I mean, that's going to be interesting. And I think that could kind of lead into what you're wanting to talk about that we discussed earlier about like sort of the business practices and stuff like that, how that would change on our end.
Yep.
And stuff like that.
That's right. Yeah. So we mentioned that one of the other segments that we want to try to throw in regularly, if not every show, is not just talking about the actual knives themselves, but the business side of it. That part intrigues me almost as much as the actual knives do. So which it kind of needs to, considering that that's how I make my living. So it's important to understand and try to understand and have some sort of proficiency at the business side of things. So like you said, that definitely plays into it, and being flexible on that is just going to have to be the name of the game, and trying to see which way the wind is blowing is what the next, popular steel is going to be. Or like I said, it may be a MagnaCut's hard to get for a couple of months, and then we're right back to maybe with a different name or whatever, or maybe the same name, just a different company making it. So
yeah,
we'll see how it plays out. But we did have for the business section today, just to kind of segue into that, I wanted to briefly mention about Christmas time. So some of you may understand this. Those of you that are other like knife makers or dealers, if you happen to listen to this, probably or for sure understand this. But a common misconception that I see is people thinking that, oh yeah, I guess you guys are just booming and busy at Christmas, right? I guess y'all are selling a lot of Christmas knives. And it's like, no, not really. Like, now, don't get me wrong. I mean, we're still selling knives. We're still sending stuff to dealers, but we don't get a huge Christmas rush the way, most other retailers do, which is from what I've talked to from my dealers and everybody else, that's pretty common. So it's different price points. So like say $50 Kershaw's, they probably sell a crap ton of knives at Christmas time, right? Or, so even some of the lower price, just whatever brands that are, say $100 and under.
Yeah.
But I imagine they probably do sell a lot of product at Christmas time, they probably actually have an increase in sales. But for people like us that are selling on the custom world or the higher end production stuff, the vast majority of our customers are mostly men, but men and women that during the year they're spending their extra cash on their own hobby. And then when it comes Christmas time, that extra cash has to go to spend money on the family and stuff. So that extra, you know, being able to buy the cool new knife that I want kind of goes out the window for the month of December, basically. And then people start to catch up a little bit about mid-January. It seems like that everything starts to kind of kick back off a little bit. Then income tax money starts coming in mid-January to February. So, but is that, you've experienced that too, and you're, you've been doing.
I mean, while working for you and for, you know, myself, like, you know, there's always a little bit of a, last December was the only exception for me. For some reason, it was better than most, but I don't know why. Yeah, I mean, not complaining, but, you know, this December, it's kind of returned to form. And, you know, just as a knife guy myself, you know, I'm not going out and buying myself a new knife right now. I'm not, you know, that money's allocated for other things. It's allocated for my daughter, for my wife, for my mom, you know, whatever else. Like, there's other things besides just my hobby, things that make me feel good that I like. Do I need another knife? Probably not. But, you know, I like them. So
blasphemy.
Blasphemy.
You always need another knife.
I mean, I agree 100%.
But not if it means not being able to take care of your family. So I will put that caveat in there.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's exactly what's going on. It's simple to think about and it's simple to say and, you know, all that. But, like, people don't really think about it in that way. Because, I mean, I've had a lot of people, local people that know I make knives, like, they're like, oh, I want to get my father a, you know, father-in-law a knife for Christmas. And I'm like, okay, what do you want? And they're like, a hunting knife. I'm like, okay, this is what I make. Here's the price. And they're like, oh, okay. Because, I mean, you know, most people aren't going out and spending $300 on other people's Christmas presents. You know, unless it's like a really special Christmas present or something. Like,
It's not, you know, it's definitely not the average.
It's,
I mean, when it comes down to it, we don't necessarily think about it like this because, you know, it sounds kind of weird, but what we sell is essentially luxury goods. I mean, yes, they're tools. I mean, everything that both of us make and most of the industry makes, honestly, are things that could be, that can be used, you know, they can be used hard. I mean, I know for sure that both of our stuff can be used, you know, plenty hard, and they're hard work tools, but in reality, most people are not buying these because they truly depend on a tool that they need, a tool that's as good a quality as what we're producing. You know what I mean? It's a luxury good, but there's nothing wrong with that either. Look, Mercedes are luxury goods. Yeah. I don't see them having any trouble selling Mercedes, Land Rovers. Like, you know what I mean? Rolexes are, you can tell time just as good, maybe better with a Timex, but Rolex doesn't have any trouble selling watches.
Yes, like, but, you know, on that same note, not a lot of people are getting Rolexes or Mercedes for
Christmas. Exactly. That's what I'm saying. It puts that we're in that category, whether we, you know, I know we want to think about our stuff being like hard use, either, you know, taking out the some mercenary somewhere is using one to take out some bad guy or something, or, you know, it's on the farm doing hard work and, you know, there's, you know, some dude fought off a grizzly bear or something like that. But when it comes down to it, it's, you know, it's more of a collecting thing for most of us, and they are technically luxury goods. And so that just comes with the market. Like, you know, that's just the way it is. It's every year. It's not just us. It's all of our dealers. Like I said, for, you know, except for their, like, maybe $100 and under price point, something like that. It's very, very common. It's just the way it is. So, and then of course this year we're coming into the end of a year that's been probably the worst year of the knife market since I've been doing this, since like 2007, 2008 that I can remember.
Yeah. I mean, I obviously don't know, you know, for that long as far as the market, but I know it's the worst one I've seen.
Yeah. And it's especially, and that's based on, obviously what we're doing now and the amount of knives that we're selling and stuff is way different than what I was doing, you know, 10, 15 years ago. But still, you can see it in the secondary and stuff. And what's killing me is, like, you're still seeing guys on there like, man, I'm trying to sell this such and such knife and it's just, I can't sell it. It's, you know, I've got the price lows. Like, guys, you got to read the room. Like, it's like the market is not good right now. It's not because any particular brand is losing its, you know, losing its hotness. It's not, the hype is not over. It's just that like people are paying $7 a carton for eggs and crap like that. Like it's, people do not have as much extra money. Again, we're selling luxury goods. Like people have to prioritize. And when inflation gets as out of control and everything as it's been for the last year or like, I mean, it's been going for a while, but it's kind of peaked this year. So I think it's got way more to do than with the economy at large than it does with our industry in particular or any particular brand. So,
yeah, I mean, do you want to eat this week or would you like another titanium frame lock?
Right.
You know,
right. And again, it goes back to, the, you know, a lot of the guys, the true knife freaks out there, they might actually forego the eating and buy the knife, but they also have, most of them have families to, you know, that they have to take care of. And so it's a choice of, you know, are my kids going to eat? Am I going to be able to buy, you know, new school clothes for my kids, that kind of stuff. That's what people have been having to deal with this year. So it's just that and all the unknown leading up to the election and stuff of what was going to happen. Like people were, everybody was and on all levels from what we do, you know, up to automobiles, to houses, everything else. Like people have been skittish about spending money. So,
yeah,
I've got
friends in the automotive industry and that, you know, work at factories and stuff that build parts for automobiles. And that he said, it's like one of the slowest years they've ever had. And they've cut down like, bunch of different models for a particular brand that they make cars for. And like, you know,
they've had to shift and change with the times and it's just one of it, which is, it's obviously we don't like to see it, but at the same time, like we know that big picture, that's what it is. It's hurting everybody. It's nothing to freak out about. It just kind of bothers me to see some of the people, especially some of the people like, you know, on Facebook and stuff on this, talking about the secondary market and this and that. And like, then talking about the knives are sitting on dealer sites longer and stuff. Like it does not mean that that brand is not doing well, because when you start looking around, I mean, yes, there may be a few brands that are, have such limited availability that they're, you know, things will have to get really, really bad before they're not selling. But anybody that's putting out hardly any kind of numbers and any kind of volume, like stuff is sitting on the shelves longer than it has, honestly, since I've been doing this. And I'm not just talking about our stuff. I'm talking about all the other big names. Like it's just the nature of the beast, nature of the economy right now. So guys that are trying to unload some stuff on the secondary and all that, this is one of those times where you just have to be patient and hang on. I mean, it's just like when the stock market is down, you don't go and sell everything off. You have to be patient and you sit on it and you wait. And when it goes back up, that's when you sell. So if you're playing this knife game and buying them and selling them and stuff kind of as an investment, then you've got to look at it the same way. Warren Buffett's not selling everything off when the stock market's at an all time low, I guarantee you.
Yep.
So that's when he's buying everything up, actually.
So yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, and I don't necessarily buy and sell as much as I used to. Like when I first met you, I seemed like I had a new knife every week, but
you yes, know. You did.
But you know, now I don't buy it unless I know I'm going to keep it or I'm okay keeping it. You know, there's a few that I don't carry anymore and I'd like to sell them, but I ain't going to sell them, you know, for half the price of what I paid for them right now.
Yeah.
I'd rather just keep it. And
that's right. It
and, you know, every so often,
that's right.
Whatever, you know, but like,
and if you need to, I get the whole, you know, you buy a knife, you keep it for a while, and then, you know, you find something you want a little more, so you unload that knife to free up money for the next knife. But the fact of the matter is, like right now, you can't do that. You can, but you're probably going to take a loss on the knife that you bought. You know, I mean, there might be a few out there that you don't, but for the most, like I said, the ones that are just really, really hard to come by and stuff like that. But anybody that pretty much any company is putting out any kind of volume, I think it's, you know, it's just, we're not in that heyday right now where you can buy pretty much any knife from any major brand and know you're going to either get your money back or even make money on it whenever you decide to get rid of it. That's, I mean. Right.
And that was sort of where we were, like when I was saying when we first met, you know, like I would buy a knife for $180, keep it for a couple months, sell it for $150. And, you know, yeah. that was sort of just rent in my mind.
Exactly.
I paid
to, the $30 was well worth getting to carry the knife for 3 months. Yeah.
Yeah. And then I would, you know, buy another knife for $180 or $150 or whatever else. And, you know, but at that time it worked, and now it just doesn't work.
Well, and when you started getting up into the higher price points, I mean, guys were buying knives and literally making money off of them. You know, you could get it, show it off on Instagram for a month or so, be the, you know, be the cool guy with a cool new knife, and then sell it and actually make money off of it. And I'm not knocking it. When it's like that, I love it. It's great for all of us.
Yeah, no,
that's awesome. But
I was just never that guy. I never.
Yeah. I mean, dude, there was when we first started. Well, maybe not the very first years, but there was a section of time there, like at pretty much any knife show that you went to, where you could go and virtually anybody that was in demand enough that they needed to have a lottery, you could pretty much go get in any lottery there. And if you hit, you were almost guaranteed that you were going to make money on that knife if you wanted to turn around and sell it. And that's what tons of people did. So then we kind of got to the point where everybody was doing lotteries, whether, you know, it was kind of a marketing thing and people were doing them, whether there was actually that much demand or not. But that's another topic.
Yeah. I mean, so, to kind of touch on that, I mean, like, I do lotteries now, but like, main reason I do lotteries at like shows and stuff is just so more people can see the knives as opposed to, you know,
the same. Well, that's the thing. Yeah. I mean, if the knives are going to sell quick enough that you're not, I mean, you're at a show, you're the big part of being there is to get a lot of people in contact with your knives. It's not just to sell knives, you know what I mean? Like that's, I mean, in the long run, it's to sell knives, but those particular knives that you're on your table are kind of your showcase. And if you're blessed enough that they're going to sell within the first couple of hours or even the first day, honestly, like, I mean, there's going to be people there the second day that you don't want them to get there and see an empty table or just see the couple that you got left or whatever. Like, you want people to be able to see your best work. So doing lotteries is a way to ensure that you can do that. So it's got its place for sure. Mm-hmm. But it used to be, I mean, almost a guarantee to make money off of stuff. Like I said, the people that at one point that were doing lotteries were all, like I said, they were popular enough that virtually anything you got in a lottery, I mean, there would people be literally standing there as soon as you turn around with a knife trying to hand you, you know, sometimes double, like some of the really still like Hinder, Emerson, Strider, like the big guys, like, yeah, like you could hit one of their knives at a, especially the handmade stuff. Like you could, if you'd go to a lottery, like the USN lottery or somewhere, oh man. Yeah. You could easily, you know, hit a lottery, go up there, pay table price for it, turn around and within 5 minutes, double your money, if not more in some cases. It was insane. In a good way.
Awesome, but yeah. I mean,
but we are not there now, folks. That is not what the market's like. Again, there's still, I mean, Hinder or Cranks Out or Emerson, you know, they do a handmade knife. Yeah. They're probably going to just, you know, you're probably okay on that as an investment, but the typical stuff that, you know, just our normal buying and selling is, it is definitely not in that place that it used to be just a couple of years ago. So, but I think it's coming back. I do think that will get back probably pretty quickly, especially if the economy starts to turn around like I'm hoping it is going to this coming year. So we'll see how that goes. All right. So we mentioned last time that if we started getting some questions, we want to do a question and answer section, and we did manage to get a couple of questions. So I'm going to toss that over to you, let you go over the questions. We'll talk about them for a little bit, and then we're probably getting close to wrapping up by the time we get done with that. So what do we have for questions?
First question is, are you going to upload to Apple Podcast or iTunes? I don't remember exactly what it said. That's from Sam Didio on Instagram. And short answer, yes. We've got to figure out how first. But yes, we definitely plan to. That first episode, we didn't really know what we're doing, and I'm not going to claim.
We were just happy that we actually got something like posted that people could see. Like, that was a major victory. So,
yeah. But I plan to try to figure that out and get it posted to Apple, and that way it'll be more accessible to all different podcast platforms outside of Spotify and YouTube and all that sort of stuff. So, yeah, definitely plan on doing that.
Yep, we for sure are going to do that. And guys, obviously you may not want to like stare at our mugs, but I highly recommend doing the YouTube as we go along. We're probably going to be doing some stuff where we're going to try not to keep it audio friendly, as far as not having too many, you know, visual references, but we are for sure going to be doing some stuff where we're going to be showing some knives and stuff like that as we go along for the YouTube side of things. So if you don't really care one way or the other, I would recommend probably watching it on YouTube if possible. That's probably going to be your best place to be able to get the full effect of everything. So, all right, we had one more question.
Yes, we did. And this was from Michael.138 on Instagram, or maybe Mikhail. Sorry. There's a comment on your post. It said, first episode was really good. It sounded like you had been doing it for years. We kind of have been, just not being recorded. But
I've been running my mouth a long time.
He said, keep it up. I'm looking forward to you having a knife podcast in my lineup. So the question is, what is your favorite knife/design of all time? I'm going to let you have that one first.
Oh, yeah. Put me on the spot first here. So that's a really hard question, actually. That's like, it's kind of like I was talking about with the steels. It's almost like there's different categories, or like different, you know, for the steels, there's a great steel for different uses for knives. It's almost like, you know, I really like some of the really nice, like classical stuff. And I like some of the more, you know, like pure tactical stuff, but probably one of the ones that had a bigger impact on me that I've never owned one. So I've still got to rectify that at some point, but probably the Tom Brown Tracker. That's maybe a little bit of a cheesy answer, because I know it's, you know, it turned into a movie knife and the whole works, but like, it was a good movie. So there's that. So yeah, that's,
I said, you introduced me to that movie. I didn't even know it existed.
Oh yeah. If you even remotely like knives, you've got to watch that. So The Hunted. So yeah, the Tracker, that was, so when I wish I could remember the guy's name. When I first got on the forums, when I was first starting all this, I was doing a lot of Hamones and stuff. Doing Hamones really intrigued me. And I apologize, I cannot remember the guy's name, but there was a guy that was doing, and he had permission from Tom Brown to use the design. He was doing Trackers with Hamones on them, and they were badass. Like, they were awesome.
Was it Dave Winger by chance?
No, I don't think. No, it's somebody that he may have been doing it too, but I'm pretty sure that's still not the person. He's still doing them.
Tracker, you know, variants and stuff, and you know,
does he do them with Hamones or Hammonds or whatever?
But I think he's done some in 1095. I haven't seen one with a Hamone, but yeah. Sorry.
This guy, he may have done other versions of it, but this guy, that was kind of his thing. It was specific. And he, to my knowledge, again, I don't want to like discredit him or anything, but I don't remember, like, he was one of those guys that was on there, and was, some of his work was kind of popular when I first got on the forum, but then like it seemed to kind of disappear, or at least went off my radar. He may be famous as crap in whatever circle, but I don't remember. I wish I remembered his name. No disrespect to him, whoever it was, but his knives were awesome. They were really cool. So just that kind of combination of those knives being just such an iconic look to them, and then the having the Hamones on them too, that just really kind of did it for me. So that, if I had to pick one, that would probably be it.
That makes a lot of sense for me, knowing you, and yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. Well, it too, it's got a really mean, kind of aggressive look to it. It's tactical looking, but then it's also, you know, kind of got some bushcraft stuff going on. I mean, it's really, you know, it's just
a tactical woods ninja, which I think you fancy yourself as.
maybe at one point. Nah, might be getting a little old for all that now, but okay. Yeah, wishful thinking, but yeah. So I would, that if I had to pick one, I think that's probably the one I would pick. So all right, your turn, spotlight on you.
All right. So I saw this question, you know, 4 or 5 days ago, and I've been thinking about it since. And the one that stands out in my mind above all others would be the Todd Begg Bodega. And I don't know, something about the fact that it's not that futuristic of a design. It's a fairly simple design as far as the lines. It looks sort of classic, but it's also futuristic. And
yeah.
I liked that. I liked that combination of sort of, you know, styles with it. Like, the lines themselves aren't that complicated, but he adds features like the fuller with the holes in it, and, you know, the milling, right, and all the other stuff that kind of makes it, you know, little more than the sum of its, you know, just lines, I guess.
Yeah. Spices it up a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And this is, you know, one that I don't even think I've ever handled one now that I'm thinking about it. But, you know, it's just a beautiful knife. It's got a really cool profile. It's got the harpoon. It's got, you know, choil in the front and all that. And, you know, Todd Begg's execution as far as his, you know, I lost all my brain thoughts.
His technical abilities are yeah, not lacking at all.
No, definitely not. Yeah.
He is.
Definitely all that. So yeah, that would probably have to be my answer. Like Jonathan said, there's so many designers and I respect them for different reasons and different makers, different companies and all that. And like, it's very hard to narrow it down to one, but I feel like Todd Begg is a, you know, he's world-class knife maker and that's a really solid design. So, I mean, I feel pretty good about picking that one. So.
Oh yeah. You cannot go wrong with that. Yeah. Todd's absolutely fantastic work. Fantastic eye for design. Like he's, yeah. Like you said, it's kind of got it all. Like you said, it's got that little bit of a futuristic kind of look to it, but like not to the point of overkill. Like it's done very cleanly and classy and not like, you know, not futuristic, you know, like this looks like it fell off an alien spacecraft kind of thing, but like,
yeah.
Look like some future more like
too, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh amazing. Yeah. Not necessarily knocking those, but yeah. It gives it a different look though. This one looks like some superior craftsman being from the future, you know, came up with the design and executed it is what it looks like. So,
yeah,
which may be the case. Todd may be a time traveler or something. So
he might be,
but
yeah,
that's a good choice. That's a solid choice. I like that a lot.
Are there any other knives that you can kind of just, you know, that have like influenced you or, you know, you just want to talk about?
Yeah, them, you know? There are. I mean, obviously there are. There's some we may save to get into for some other topics down the road, but one that I can think of, one, not necessarily one knife, but one specific designer. And I mentioned them last time as far as me getting into making knives, period, is the Strider knives. On the folders, if you look close, obviously I don't think that I think I did a decent job of not getting too close to anything to be like, you know, paid a little homage without getting too close to anything. I feel like with the Mac 2 design, it's in my eye, at least it's got some Strider-ish features as far as, you know, just the overall, as far as the blade, you know, gets kind of skinnier around the pivot area, a bigger butt, you know, so it's,
The butt definitely reminds me a little bit of it. And yeah, it does kind of have that center taper like Striders have. And
it's not as drastic as theirs is. Theirs is even more drastic. And, you know, like I said, I definitely tried to not get anywhere close. Like wasn't trying to mimic a design, but more just kind of a little bit of design theory, you know, from that general. So yeah, that one I would say. So like the basically all of the Strider folders for the most part have that same. I mean they have some different looks, but they all have some similar features with some of that stuff. So similar lines. So pretty much all of them, like, you know, the SNG and the SMF, those are the PT. They're all, well, you know, some of them are just basically bigger versions of others, but they all have those similar lines where it's a, you know, big kind of aggressive looking blade and then. What I'd think of is like a skinny waist, which would be around the pivot and then gets flares back out and gets bigger towards the butt. So
it's so you like a skinny waist and a big butt.
Wait, this isn't a rap song. Hold up. We might could turn it into one, but that's, hey, classic lines are classic lines. That's all I'm going to say.
This is true. I think you carried a Protec Strider PT like,
yep.
Until you made the prototype Mac 2.
I think I took it out of my pocket to start carrying that so I could, obviously wanted to, you know, test it out and see if I liked the design and all that stuff. So yeah, that was, and it, that PT being the size it was and me having carried it for, I don't remember how long I carried it, months at least, it was, that I think that was kind of what was in my head when I designed the first Mac 2, which was a 3-inch blade, you know, basically the same size knife. So, because I was really enjoying carrying that PT at the time. And so that size knife really appealed to me. And so that's where we started. And then didn't take long and the people wanted bigger. And so after a little first kicking drop. And screaming on my part. Yeah.
First drop.
Yeah. And we
put out 28 knives and we had just worked ourselves to death about it. And they're like, could you make it bigger? And I'm like,
but we love them like this. Like, this is perfect to us. Yeah. No, so I had to get over being butthurt and thinking that just because I thought that was the ideal, you know, size and everything else, that did not mean that everybody else agreed. So, and if you're going back to the whole business side of things, if you want to stay in business making things, then you need to make things that people want to buy. So, so we did end up making the switch. And now I don't really have any problem with, you know, it's not that it's easy to necessarily just go and, you know, scale it up or scale it down. It's a whole, you know, it's a whole thing, but it doesn't hurt my feelings if people want it anymore.
I think that's one thing that there's a misconception on is you can just scale it up, scale it down, and everything stays the same and nothing, you know, has to really change. And that's one of the biggest misconceptions that I think is out there for people who don't make knives.
Yeah.
Don't design knives. Cause I mean, your pivot stays the same. Your bearing stays the same. The 256 screws stay the same. Like, you know, all that stays the same. And then, you know, sometimes, you know, when you make it bigger, of course, that means you have more room, but doesn't necessarily always translate visually just because it's, you know, sometimes you blow something up to where the blade is a half inch longer, but now the handle is two inches wide or something like that.
Right. You know, that's right.
Weird.
So. Yeah. Yeah. Just scaling it, you know, at the same ratio all the way around doesn't necessarily always work. And then when you start having to make changes to not keep everything a 1-to-1 ratio, then it really gets tricky because when you change one thing, it usually means you end up having to change four more to make everything work right. So
it's a hydra for sure. You cut off one head and three more appear.
Yeah. So. And that's just to make the design work right. And we're not even talking about like what we're doing on the manufacturing side of things to where, you know, you're not just going out there and taking a pattern and laying it out on a piece of steel and cutting out some parts that are a little bit bigger. Like you're talking about, you know, creating whole new palettes, whole new systems and processes and everything around. Yeah. Systems and processes are similar, but you got to make new work holding. You got to figure out all the stuff as far as the tool paths and stuff. Like it's a lot more to it than just, you know, hit the button and make it bigger.
It's probably something we should have talked about in the beginning, but I'm going to say it now anyway.
That's cool.
Like, you know, maybe it's a little late in this episode to say it, but you know, next time we probably need to preface the fact that like you are more of a knife company and I'm more of a knife maker at this stage. Like, you know, of how I do things, you know, my particular process is not the same as you. I have no thought of work holding whatsoever when I design stuff at this current moment. So,
That's for sure something we can dive into and actually talk about some of the, you know, in a future episode, we can talk about some of the differences in, you know, cause I've been there too.
I know both sides of it. So
yeah, like, that's something we can for sure talk about and just give people an idea. So they're, you know, the people that don't know anything about knife making really, you know, give them an idea of what it is. And then maybe other people that are, you know, knife makers out there, let them kind of maybe have only experienced one side of it or the other, they can get a little perspective from a different viewpoint there.
Yeah. I'm starting to feel like the weirdo that doesn't have a CNC, like everybody else seems to have them now. And I'm
there's still, I know it seems like it, but there's still plenty of people out there doing it without them. So
yeah,
it's definitely way more prominent now than it was, but it's, and there's something to be said for still doing it that way too. There's nothing. And that doesn't mean that you won't be in, you know, a year from now or 6 months from now or however long, but it's just kind of a different animal too. Like it's a whole another skill set. Like I said, that's at least a whole episode right there. Probably a few episodes of talking about all that. So, so let's kind of work towards wrapping it up with kind of what we've got going on, in the shop since we talked last week. You got anything different or new going on?
Working on a batch of, my little, I make a design called the Moraine S. It's a little neck knife, 2-inch blade, Warncliffe-ish, Warncliffe sheep's foot type blade. Working on a batch of those for River's Edge Cutlery. I just sent some stuff to Knife Joy. But other than that, I'm planning on getting those 10 or so knives finished and then working on cleaning up my shop and getting that surface grinder up and running for the end of the year and possibly yep. doing some parts prep. I've been prepping parts for my Texas builds and stuff like that. Just kind of cutting good. Stuff out, getting it flat, drilling holes and, you know, not getting full on into it, but
right.
Just kind of getting stuff ready.
Getting a head start. That's always a good thing.
Yeah. I remember that's what we used to do a lot in back to the December conversation. You know, once it got to December, you would have me going around, you know, cutting stuff out for you for customs and, you know, all sorts of stuff like that instead of
yep.
doing normal stuff, I guess.
Yep. Took that time when things slowed down a little bit to prep and get ready for the floodgates to open back up. So
yep.
cool.
What about you?
I think I touched on it a little bit last time. We're kind of in a little bit of a bind, to be honest with you, because we ran into the same problem we keep running into about we're having to wait on blades to get ground at the CNC grinder. And so we're still waiting on that. In the meantime, I've been running Tantos and running the bevels on the machines, but we can't run them at a fast enough pace on the machines doing that to really keep up with the numbers that we would like to be putting out. So we have not been able to put out as many, but we have been making quite a few Tantos, which we had not made in a while. So it's yeah. you know, it's kind of a trade-off. So it's cool. And we're making them in some of the new configurations that we'd never done before, like the swerves and stuff. So, yeah. so we're getting some new Tanto variations out there. We also got several fixed blades done this past week of the Ridge Runners. We've been another thing that slowed us down. The last two orders I made when we use the, I'll talk more about this in detail another episode, but when we mill the blades on the machine, we go through end mills like so for every pallet of blades, basically every blade uses for every blade that it's the equivalent of one end mill for every blade. If you count both, like all the bevels on the blade, both main yeah. bevels and swedges and all that. So, yeah. so when we do a pallet with 12 blades on it, that means we're using essentially for both sides, we end up using basically 12 end mills. And so we go through end mills quick and they're not cheap, but that's a topic for another day, but
yeah.
we've been able to kind of stay in a rhythm and kind of know when to reorder them and get them. But the last two orders that we've made, they're behind on their production or something because we've gotten partial orders from them the last two times mm-hmm. instead of getting our full order of end mills. So then we've had to wait for the second half to come in. So we've had a little bit of a lag on that too. So now, that has never happened before. Now that we know that's happened, we can kind of plan for it and we'll order them farther ahead so yeah. we can keep them in stock better. But that had never happened before. So that was kind of a new one to us, but everybody gets behind sometimes. So yeah. So we're basically running Tantos. We should have a new batch of drop point blades in here within the next, well, about before the end of the year, hopefully within the next couple of weeks. They were going to try to run some for us, I think, on a weekend. I hope that they're able to do that and get us a partial batch done so we can get going on those. And then the only other thing really is with those not having those end mills has kept us from being able to, well, let me back up. Surface grinder went down too. So yeah, we had some sort of a wiring issue on the surface grinder. It's really not the actual surface grinder. It's just the wiring that runs the coolant pump. So we've kind of found a workaround with the coolant pump, and we're actually using a sump pump out of a 55 gallon drum to circulate coolant and run coolant through it. So we're back to grinding now, and because it's been a long process to get the information we need about the parts and that kind of stuff. So we're back to grinding blades. Once we get some more blades ground to run Tantos, and I've got more blanks for the two new fixed blade models that we did a month or so ago. The Ringed Agent. And the Stalker.
Okay.
Yeah.
Couldn't remember the other one.
Blanked on the names for a minute there. So yeah, the Ringed Agent and the Stalker. I've got blanks in house for those. They're actually the first ones we just did down and dirty batch with the A2 steel, but this batch is going to be out of S90V. So we just got to get them surface ground. Then we're going to put them on the machine and mill the bevels on the machine. So I'm hoping before the end of the year, we may not have them done before the end of the year, but I'm hoping to at least be getting the bevels ready and all that and get them sent off to heat treat before the end of the year. So sweet. That'll mean first of the year, new drop of the new fixed blades, and really the first drop that's not kind of a prototype drop with a, you know, with a higher end steel. So
yeah.
Yep. That pretty much covers where we're at.
I just ordered S90B for the first time the other day.
Yeah.
Somehow never used it. I don't know. Just,
I guess this is our first time too. We have a very small batch of Tanto blades out at Heat Treat right now that are S90V as well.
Yeah.
So that'll be a first. So I'm excited to see how those go over for the, not everybody loves Magna Cut. So
yeah.
The ones that maybe that's been holding them back of wanting one of our Mac 2s, but they don't like Magna Cut. This will kill their excuses. So.
Yeah. I know one for sure right off the top of my head. I'm not going to mention
it. Yeah. Probably the same one I'm thinking about. So
yeah.
Yeah. Yep. So we'll see how that goes. I'll go ahead and tell you, it's definitely not machining any cleaner than Magna Cut does. Maybe a little bit worse, but we'll see. Yeah. It's somewhere around the same as far as the, you know, the machining side of it. We'll see when we get to the finishing stages.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, yeah. Never mind. I was about to get into a thing, but we need to wrap it up. So,
yeah, we could turn this into a 2-hour deal here. All right, guys. So we're really enjoying this so far. Please give us some feedback and let us know what we can do that will make things better. Please hit us up with questions, and please, like I said, just give us feedback. Please give us a follow, a subscribe on YouTube, and just help us try to grow this thing. We're enjoying it, and we're going to try to provide some value along the way and give you guys some behind the scenes. So we do now have an official email for the show. So if you want to email questions in, Chase, will you hit them with that email?
The email is knifefreakshow@gmail.com.
All right. There you go. So, or you can always just drop comments in our Instagram or on the YouTube, on the comment section on the YouTube video. So we're probably eventually going to set up a Instagram account specifically just for the show, but at the moment, like until it gets bigger, I don't that's just too much to keep up with, so we'll keep promoting it from our two. Go ahead and hit them again with your Instagram and your website address.
Yes, my Instagram is at @BoatRightBladeWorks. It's where I do most of my stuff, and then my website is boatrightbladeworks.bigcartel.com.
Cool. All right. And we are just McNeeseKnives.com, and we are McNeese Knives on Instagram, and we have McNeese Knives on Facebook, but pretty much McNeese Knives everywhere. So check us out. We appreciate it, guys. Please give us some feedback and hit those likes and subscribes, and we will see you next week, Knife Freaks.
Keep that Knife Freak flag flying.
Yeah, we got to work on the outro. We hadn't got a good outro yet.